So I before the call, I decided, okay, let me I'll grab a member list from 10 years ago. And I looked at the number of titles that had marketing, any reference to marketing, brand, whatever in the title. 6%, roughly 6% of the members back then had some marketing, key marketing responsibility. The current list is it's double, 12%.
The voice you just heard was Ted Matthews, president and owner of Forum Group, LLC. He's a veteran public relations practitioner with broad experience in public and government affairs, media, marketing, and internal communications. And he runs Forum Group, which is a leadership group of corporate communicators from corporations and nonprofits across the country. Join us.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So for, you know, people may not be aware of the Forum Group or a little bit about, you know, your role there. So I'm hoping maybe you could give us a little top line on the Forum Group.
Well, thanks, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here. I would say, first of all, the Forum Group is somewhat intentional that we're not well known, but our this organization, this association, its origins actually go back more than 44 years ago. It was its original group in North America was established 44 years ago. But the origins of this group actually go back to the 70s in Europe, when a bunch of American expats began to get together informally over dinner in different restaurants in Europe, you know, just, you know, collecting other colleagues to share some things about what they were doing in, you know, the business world, what their companies were involved in. But I think, honestly, it was mostly a chance to commiserate and enjoy about 12 bottles of wine in a Parisian cafe and then close the place down. And but for several years, this cabal of senior communications corporate affairs leaders, you know, would bring other colleagues into the room and take turns running a meeting and organizing it until at one point they, you know, one of them said, hey, this was taking a lot of my time and my staff time. How about if one of you, you know, volunteered to do this and we'll pay you a fee? And a gentleman named Bob was the one who raised his hand and said, yes, I think because I'm wanting to do something different anyway. So he basically began to formalize this loose collection of colleagues into an association and then exported the concept to the States, to North America in 1977. I was invited to join this group when I ran comms and public affairs for a consumer products company based in the Carolinas, and that was back in 2001. So it's a interesting association. It's basically just a bunch of senior communications folks getting together and having a chance to share some best practices and a chance to commiserate, which, as you know, that can be invaluable.
Yeah, 100%. I found over the past year that I've been a member now, I found it very helpful for a lot of reasons. You mentioned commiseration, but also it's almost like an early warning system, you know, because you get to learn from one another about what are they facing. And I remember during, you know, earlier in the pandemic, I remember a lot of conversations around masks. Should we be not only, you know, requiring or not requiring for employees in the workplace, but also should we be giving out branded masks and other things? And so and then what was interesting was, is that conversation probably about 3 weeks later organically started to happen in our organization. So I was like, oh, this is interesting. I'm getting sort of an early look at issues that are coming up for other organizations, you know, but even before they come up in my own.
And that is obviously when early on in the pandemic, when, you know, our healthcare leaders and, you know, the task force of the White House was saying, oh, you don't need to wear a mask. You don't need to wear a mask. Because they were needing to protect the mask supply for the healthcare workers. It was pretty obvious. And you know, it was what, 2 months maybe after that where everybody was basically mandating masks. going into a store, going into, you know, even going into a park, for crying out loud. But I actually got the first message question from a member in early January. And this member represents a global company, and they have a lot of associates and facilities in Asia. And she had sent a note saying, hey, have you heard from anybody about this COVID, you know, coronavirus issue, the virus? And is it, are people beginning to respond or close offices? And I said, no, I hadn't heard much about it. I was aware of the reports. But we didn't send a note out to the members at that point. It was not until maybe 2 weeks later, another one or two members raised a question. And that's when we shot the first question out to the membership and began mostly at that point, I think, collecting question marks like, no, but I'm interested in hearing whatever feedback you get. And literally it was, I think, late February when it really began to explode. And in fact, you know, this group that I run is, you know, before COVID, I would organize 5 meetings a year for these members where they could come together in person and share some best practices over the course of a day. We had our first meeting in 2020 in Beverly Hills on February 27th and 28th. And if you look at the market on February 27th last year, that was the first day of significant turbulence in the share prices. I saw a number of members walking into the room, looking at their phones, blowing up, and their stock price is already down 10%. And of course, it all fell apart after that. But so we pivoted basically to a every Friday afternoon, 4 o'clock Eastern time, Zoom call, so that these members could get on a call and just share real time all these issues that were going on. It was truly hair on fire for them.
Yeah, 100%, right? Just trying to figure out what was going on and how to respond or not respond at that time. Yeah, for sure. Well, and so within your background, obviously, you've been a communicator, you've been a journalist, right? And now you're sort of still very active in the field, obviously, through Forum Group. So you've had different, like, almost viewpoints on communications during a different phases of your career, I guess I'd say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, when I look back at my career, I started as a newspaper reporter, 4 years in daily news as a writer and photographer. Then, you know, I remember 1983, 1984, a lot of my J school friends across the country, they're, you know, half of them were losing jobs because their two newspaper cities were becoming one newspaper towns. And, you know, I realized, yeah, I don't think the newspaper business is a long-term viable prospect. And it was about that time I had an opportunity to join Duke Power Company, now Duke Energy, and move to Charlotte, North Carolina. And, you know, shortly and was involved in it, mostly internal comms issues with Duke. Met my wife there, and you know, the Carolinas have been my home ever since. I'm originally from St. Louis area. And then I went to my former company, Springs Industries, like I said, a $3 billion consumer products company, makes bed and bath fashions. Had a great career, rose to the top job, took the CCO job, reporting to the chairman and chief executive officer. And that's when I realized, oops, I had allowed my professional network to lapse. I had stopped participating in the groups like IABC and PRSA because my job just got bigger and I, you know, just couldn't find the time to get out of the office. And, you know, when you're the number one person, you know, with that functional responsibility representing a fairly high profile industry, you need to have a network of colleagues that you can tap into. And just very fortunately, we received an invitation shortly after to join this association and loved my time as a member. Because, you know, like you, I could compare, you know, what others were doing to be successful and how they were doing it and take lessons that I could use at my company, you know, adapt things to fit my company's culture and style. But Everybody needs a network, and I don't and I'd say that people realize that and how important a personal professional network was for their development, especially in the Great Recession. But during COVID, when things were shut down and people were isolated, it was never more important at that point.
Yeah, that's right. And it's almost like we all need to dust off our networking skills again, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had my first sort of networking lunch in a while, a couple weeks ago, and it was kind of refreshing, you
Yeah,
know?
wasn't it fun?
Yeah,
I know.
absolutely.
I was so
Yeah.
excited. I got an email from a member of 6, 7 weeks ago saying she just recently relocated to the job where she had been working for the past year remotely from Greensboro down, and she's down in Charlotte now. And she said, "Hey, I got a vaccine. I'm good to go. Let's get together for lunch." And that was the first business lunch with a member I've had in more than a year. It was fun. I really miss it.
Yeah.
So I can't wait for this group to get back together in person. That's the plan for later this year.
Yeah, I look forward to that as well. Well, Ted, so let's talk about communicators, senior communicators.
Yeah.
And you've heard a lot. Obviously, even without COVID, I think that there were new challenges, right? And I'm just curious, like from your standpoint in listening to your members, talk to your members, what do you think that some of the biggest challenges facing senior communications executives today, what would some of those things be?
Well, I mean, if we're talking, present time, I think clearly what a lot of the members are struggling with, certainly those that represent non-traditional manufacturing type companies. The members who represent companies with a pretty large office-based workforce, they're all struggling with return to office issues. We just had a call, our monthly member call yesterday, and I invited a re an internationally recognized remote work expert back to the to speak to the group, Kate Lister. She's based in San Diego. She spoke to the group last June, in the midst of the crazy hair on fire period. And so Kate kind of brought a year later perspective. And most of it was all around return to office stuff. But a lot of these folks are still struggling with it. Their companies have not been able to get off, the fence on, setting a date and sticking to it. A lot of dates had been set. I mean, we were talking a year ago at this time, Paul. You may recall, people were talking a year ago saying, "Oh, we'll probably be open in June." Or, "Okay, now we're going to do after July 4th." Okay, well, now after Labor Day 2020, it's a year later. And, a lot of, I think a lot of companies are making their workforce a little bit more anxious because there's no certainty in the schedule. And now I've got some companies that I can point to where the executive team said, "This is the date, get ready, start making your plans now." And while it may sound harsh, at the end of the day, that's really what people want, is they want a little certainty. Okay, this is what the plan is. I'm going to have to, suck it up and let's figure out how the daycare situation, how we're going to take care of mom, who's living with us, whatever, and start moving forward. Now, I was just talking to one of my members this morning. She's with a Houston-based energy company. They have actually been in the offices since August of last year. So we're talking, 10 months, and they're nearly at 100% capacity,
Oh, wow.
and they've not had any significant issues. So, I'm gonna have her lead off a discussion in July, because so many of the people or members are in the group are still wrestling with some of these things about trying to accommodate every employee concern, and anxiety, and help people adjust. the workplace has changed. It's definitely going to be different. And I think long term we'll never be completely back to a 9 to 5 Monday through Friday routine. I think most companies, that's pretty clear. But there's still a lot of folks struggling with it. I mean, Kate mentioned yesterday the McKinsey study saying, you know, 2/3 of the companies that they surveyed had not communicated a date or their plans for return to office. So that's a lot of uncertainty. There was a conference board survey in June that came that I saw in the USA Today. Basically, a third of the companies that they surveyed expect that 40% of their employees will be working from home 1 year post-COVID. So you can see how things are going to be extremely different for some time. And a lot of these communications folks, they're all right smack in the middle of all this stuff, you know, and helping the executive team make the decisions, communicate it, you know, and have the listening mechanisms in place to continue to get employee feedback to deal with you know, the anxieties and the uncertainties and the special circumstances that you just have to respond to.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I went back to the office this week, actually. Met just with a couple colleagues who also went in for the first time in 15 months. And you know, it was nice. It was nice to be together. I think the idea of, you know, the hybrid workplace probably will be the winning solution ultimately, right? But it probably also depends on corporate real estate footprints. I think we saw early in the pandemic, there was, well, I can't remember which organization, one of the members had they had announced that they were going to actually create this hybrid or more work from home on a permanent basis and started to shed real estate even that early in the pandemic. So I think some of that drives decisions probably if you have a big entrenched footprint of, you know, a space you're paying for, you probably have a higher interest in bringing people back faster. If you have space you could get out of, maybe you're more flexible in a hybrid workplace. I don't know, it'd be interesting to see how that plays out too.
Yeah, if I remember right, I believe that was Brian Grace at Nationwide. They had just announced that issue. They already had a fairly sizable work from home population, which was kind of news to me. About a third, I think, of their office type employees were work from home, but they've got call centers and a lot of other facilities across the country. And they announced that real early. That was their intent, and they put the marker down. I haven't had a chance to, you know, follow up and see how they're doing, how the rollout's gone, but it does work. That's what most executives, you know, were shocked by. The workforce has actually been more productive in many cases because they're not commuting for an hour, hour and a half every day. They're still getting up around the same time, fixing the lunch for the kids, whatever, but you know, they're multitasking a lot more too. And it is been a very different world for everybody this past year, but that's a little comforting to know that everybody's going through it at the same time, right?
Yeah, and not just here, all around the world. So,
Yes, right.
yeah. All right. Well, we're just going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Ted Matthews.
Thanks.
Hey, if you're enjoying this episode or the series, we invite you to like, share, and/or review the podcast. That would mean a lot. Thanks. Okay, Ted. So let's talk about your members again. And I know they've gone through a lot of change with the pandemic, but I'm also just curious. You know, you've done a lot of surveys and other things within the group. I'm curious, how do you see the role changing, or do you, within organizations?
It's definitely changed. And you know, it had been changing, as you know. I mean, we've all been in this industry. We've all been reading the articles and seeing the anecdotal evidence about marketing's influence in the roles. I've been running this group. I took it over in 2009, so you know, I've been running it a while, and I began to notice changes several years ago in terms of just looking at job titles. So I, before the call, I decided, okay, let me, I'll grab a member list from 10 years ago. And I looked at the number of titles that had marketing, any reference to marketing, brand, whatever in the title. 6%, roughly 6% of the members back then had some marketing, key marketing responsibility. The current list is, it's double, 12% have marketing specifically in the title. Now I've got, you know, most of these folks in this group of 150 plus are, you know, their chief communications officers, their VP of comms, corporate affairs, lots of different titles, but they, their primary job is traditional comms, internal, external, lots of philanthropy, lots of some, you know, government affairs. But more and more marketing is playing a role in their responsibility and not just corporate and brand type stuff. So that has just continued to accelerate as organizations have cut out layers. And a lot of these folks have had more responsibility thrown at them. Then you have COVID last year. And I'll tell you, Paul, I saw and noticed a marked difference almost within the first month with these folks on those Friday afternoon calls. Number one, they were worn out by 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. I mean, you can imagine, but the number of these people, they were stepping up in more ways than one, taking responsibility for things that normally you would think HR leader would do. They had become the grand central station for the entire web of communications and the central nerve point for how things were going to be disseminated, decided. And in many cases, these folks really have become much more of a corporate affairs officer than a chief communications officer. Mm-hmm. And they are, and when you look at the mandate that many of these people have today compared to years ago, you've got a lot of other things, you know, in their bailiwick now. ESG responsibility, in addition to CSR activity and reporting, philanthropy, government relations, trade relations, political action committee. I mean, they're involved in a much wider array of activity for the company, for the corporation or the organization than ever before. And I think that's, that tells me and shows me that a lot of these folks, the ones who are being successful, are and have become true business leaders. And that is really what defines a very successful person in a large organization, is you become an integral part of the business team. And that, you know, you have to understand the business first, how everything works, how it all ties together. You know, and oh yeah, by the way, you know, we gotta come up with a strategy on how we're gonna communicate that new initiative. Yeah, I've got the ball on that, so it's on me. But that's really what I'd say. I've seen the most change in the past year, particularly, is just people stepping up, taking on more responsibility, or having it put in their lap, and running with it. And I think it's great.
Yeah, I do as well. And that does sound very familiar to me. And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, so often people say, you know, communicators will say things like a phrase I don't particularly like, but this idea of seat at the table, things like that. And I think sometimes people miss the fact that, well, you earn your seat, right? Yeah. Because you are adding value even beyond comms. You understand the business so well, to your point.
Right.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's a tired old phrase.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But we often fall back on those sort of things, right? But
yeah, that's right.
You know, there were several times I'll get a call from a member and they're wrestling with they're trying to reorg their team, their department, their function, trying to come up with a new, you know, moniker for, you know, what, how they're going to identify themselves. And I always encourage them, get away from comms, you know, and corporate affairs isn't always appropriate, you know, especially if you're, you know, like a large nonprofit, for example. But you've got to think in much broader terms. And there's so many more things that these folks are capable of leading and are the right person to lead, because they often have the skill set to look at the 360 degree view, not only the view, but also be listening from a 360 degree vantage point. So they can, they can assess all stakeholder points of view and synthesize that, analyze it, figure out then what is the true, most appropriate response for the organization and what are the right decisions for the organization going forward and how should we position this, being sensitive to all those, all those stakeholder groups that we have to respond to. And this is not just internal and external. There's lots of other stakeholder groups that these folks deal with today that we often didn't think about, years ago.
Yeah, it's a great point, Ted. There is one more thing I'd add to your list, and that is I find that, the communications / marketing, whatnot, function is also where a lot of folks turn for new ideas, creative ideas, right?
Sure.
I have seen a lot of innovation come out of comms departments since the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, one of the things I'm still kind of struggling to find good concrete examples of how it's going to change the comms leaders, team is AI. I mean, it's having an impact. And I remember we did a member meeting in Chicago. This is probably like 7 years ago, and invited a speaker who came out of Northwestern U, developed a small company out of the lab at Northwestern that was doing AI. And it was fascinating. I mean, they basically started with taking data, just raw data from Little League games, and turning that into narrative copy. When you think about, local newspapers, back in the day, we had stringers everywhere, right? You're covering, the local schools and reporting, stats into the newspaper office, and then somebody would take the stats and convert that into narrative copy. Now you got the computer doing it in, 1/100th the amount of time that it took all that labor and human power to convert that into narrative. So there's so many possibilities with AI, and I know there's a number of applications now where it's being used, but I still see it mostly in the agency area, where some agencies are using it. It's been used a lot in IR, investor relations, pieces for quarterly earnings reports and other analytics. But I know there's some, cool applications that we're going to see in the future. And it's kind of fascinating to see how this field is going to continue to change.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, there is a group that was working with Chase, probably about a year, 18 months ago now, that is an AI kind of led group. And they basically did a challenge. They challenged the comms social media team versus this AI to have the most engaging social media posts and tweets, right?
Wow.
And the computers won, right?
Not
Which I thought
surprised.
Was really, really interesting. So I actually had reached out to them thinking, wow, this is something I'd love to learn more about. And you need to have such a scale in terms of your posts, et cetera. So it would only work for like a giant brand like that. But I did think that was interesting. And I do agree with you. I think that will be something that's an opportunity for comms, just particularly if you're embracing the idea of that, right?
Yeah, well,
what
I mean,
could those applications be?
Yeah, and if you're not embracing the new technologies, be prepared to be moved to the side, right? Because things are just going to get faster and faster, and it's just how things are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ted, while I've got you, there's one other thing I just wanted to pivot and talk about. And that is, I have noticed, and I don't know that if it was George Floyd, Black Lives Matter, but that was a big inflection point for all organizations, I think.
Sure.
And in particular, There were many orgs, at least in my view, that weren't commenting on broader social issues, before that moment, right? And now I feel like there's been a real shift in the culture and also in the expectations of companies, communicators, et cetera, that of having a position or point of view on almost every major issue well outside the business. So I was curious, have you seen that and what your observations are around that kind
No,
of
you're exactly
trend?
right. You're exactly right, Paul. The murder of George Floyd was a tipping point. It was, I think, 2 days after that, after two or three nights of lots of unrest and some violence in different cities, I got a couple of notes one morning from two different members, two or three different members saying, "Hey, can we organize a quick call to talk about this? We're kind of trying to figure out what we need to say, both to our internal audiences and or maybe external." So I put out a quick note. 5 hours later, we had a call. I had over 50 members on that call, about a third of the membership, and
Wow.
everybody was in the same boat. I mean, some had already posted statements. Some were pointing to other CEO statements that were posted to LinkedIn or other things. But most people were just struggling. What do we do? What are others doing? That first month or so, through last summer, there was a lot of activity going on in a lot of these member companies, lots of discussions, lots of roundtables, lots of hearing sessions. The employee resource groups were reactivated in some cases. I mean, just all kinds of new energy put into them. And of course, this is in a remote, work from home environment too, so you can't get that group, together face to face. I think the concern has been, and probably will, continues to be, is it enough? Are we doing enough? What are we doing? What are the measurables? And, in October last year, during one of our virtual meetings, that was really the focus, was kind of a revisit. DE&I issues, who's doing what kind of progress have you had? What new tools have you implemented? What new policies? We followed that up with another meeting in April this year, and I've just lined up a member to host this discussion in August when we do our monthly call then, just to try to continue to keep this at least within these members. That are in forum group, abreast of what others are doing, and hopefully they'll be able to continue to highlight to their workforce and their stakeholders what they specifically are doing. But I still do have concerns, whether companies are doing enough or if what they're saying is genuine enough or being perceived as genuine enough. Because that oftentimes is, one of the failing points for some companies. They'll put out a position, but then they're really not living it up. But I don't, we have, I mean, there are a couple of examples of progress within just, the forum group members. The Wendy's company, just for the first time in their CSR report this year, posted demographic data, specific race, gender data, in that report. Capital Group, which is a global asset company, the member there shared that they put out a new DE&I report this year, and they have a very active cross-functional employee team that kind of is what they call their listening team, that tries to assess all these different issues that are going on. This is a California-based company, but they try to assess and listen to all these issues going on and then, debate it internally and come up with a recommendation to whether the executive team needs to be stepping in, making a statement, taking positions, whatever. So, I mean, there are some examples of companies that are doing a good job. Rocket Companies, Jay Farner, the CEO there, he spoke at our meeting in May. And he, he put out a 6-point plan, I think the week after George Floyd's murder, that really specifically put down some markers for Rocket to be held accountable to. You know, so those are the kinds of things I think people want to see. We need to see progress, right? That's really the bottom line, and we need to feel progress. But it's still the challenge for a lot of these communications, you know, execs is when is the appropriate time to comment and why? And 3-4 years ago, we'd have these conversations and meetings. And I would share demographic data and these studies where, you know, they could share with their CEOs about, you know, companies that do take positions and how that does resonate and add value for certain consumers. If they're a consumer facing business, it's important for them to pay attention to that. And you can look at demographic data and see that millennials in general pay more attention to a company and are more inclined to do business with a company that takes a position on a matter that is favorable to their opinion. And then you're my kind of population, the boomers and olders, you know, we're a little less inclined to, you know, feel like that company should even be stepping into that. It's not really mm-hmm. their business, mm-hmm. right? You know, unless they're directly affected by that issue. But we've seen a lot of companies, you know, comment on things that it has nothing to do with their business other than the fact that it's a personal issue or a personal motivation for that business leader to comment. And so a lot of the members in just the past few months, they've been sharing some, you know, fairly primitive tools, but they're calling them decision trees that kind of help them think through that process. If this happens, then move to this issue. If these are the circumstances, then move to this issue with the ultimate object of saying, yes, we have the number of issues that line up with our value system, with our, historical narrative or the things that we view as important. This is something we need to make a statement on. You know, so there are some things where members are definitely doing more of this, and you know, and I know it works for a certain segment of their population. It may not be working for their entire, you know, workforce population, but I think it still illustrates that the world is changing. It's changing before our eyes, and you know, business leaders need to be responding to this and accept that there is a new dynamic. There's a democratization of opinion. And, you know, there's no longer a situation within certainly corporate America where it's not all top down cascading in anymore. It's much more of a open forum for discussion in a lot of these companies. And there's a lot of good that can come out of that.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that, Ted. And the other thing is, I think the good news is that more and more companies are listening, right?
Yes.
Kind of acknowledging they don't have all the answers and looking to employees and others to help solve the problem, you know? I always tend to use a filter too in terms of say and do, right?
Right.
Because it's one thing to come out and say you support X, Y, or Z, but what is your organization actually doing to kind of help or assist or progress in that situation?
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Interesting. All right, Ted. Well, I think we're just about out of time, but I really appreciate the discussion today. I think it gives us a good view and perspective of what, you know, communicators and companies are dealing with today, you know, how the role is changing and needs to change. And also that great comment you made just in terms of, you know, it's a responsibility of all of us to really become experts in our company as well as our craft or our specialty within that company. I think that was very helpful.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining, Ted, and hope we can have you on again in the future.
Thank you, Paul. Really enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you all on the next podcast. Hey, if you're enjoying this episode or the series, we invite you to like, share, and/or review the podcast. That would mean a lot. Thanks.